Good morning. Okay, this morning, I don't know if you noticed, but the scripture readings, the Psalm 139 and the reading from Philippians, were deeply personal writings, deeply personal. And sometimes I hear people talk about the Hebrew scriptures of the Old Testament, the Psalms. Maybe not so much the Psalms, but being not so warm kind of as the New Testament. But when you think about God and David writing about his relationship with God, saying, "You knit me together in my inmost being," like that real personal touch, "I've been woven together. Wherever I go, you see me. Wherever I go, you're with me." It's really personal intimacy with God that's expressed. And if you're listening to the Philippian letter written by Paul, he speaks of the Philippian church so intimately. He says he has the affection of Christ for them. There's this deeply personal touch to that letter. I've always more enjoyed or felt it was easier to preach from the Gospels because that's because we get a lot of Jesus' interaction with people. A lot of him speaking with people, we get a little bit more of a picture of what's going on in his mind sometimes, or we can piece it together better as he's communicating and talking to other people. You think of the rich young man that came to him and asked what he needed to do to have salvation, and Jesus said, follow the law. And he says, I've done that, what else? And then it says, Jesus looked at him and loved him. And there's this, like, profound intimacy in that. Unfortunately, and you don't understand how, the young man walked away. But this profound and intense intimacy, I think, was a part of Jesus' ministry. Of course, there was some directness about Jesus, too, that was tough. Jesus overturned tables in the temple, and that was really upsetting to the Jewish establishment. And Paul was a member of that Jewish establishment, deeply rooted. So we're going to get into Acts in a minute. And when I think about Acts, it's been a little harder to kind of get into the mind of Paul because you have sermons, but you don't have too much narrative. You have action, but you don't have a lot of what was he thinking and speaking and what was happening. He just went from here to there. He moved around a lot. You know, just before he came to Christ, he was brought up in Tarsus, was educated in Jerusalem, and then he went up after the church to the area of Damascus over here to chase people down. You look at this legend down there below, think about covering miles. It wasn't so easy to do in his time, so you think about Paul as a man on the move, a man who was driven, and I think that's true. And the Pharisees, you know, were alienated from Jesus while he was living. He overturned the temple, he overturned the tables, he upset everything, the money changers, all of that. And he also said things like this, Matthew chapter 23, verse 27, "Woe to you, teachers of the law, and Pharisees, you hypocrites." And he might as well have said, "Woe to you, Paul," Saul he was then, "woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You are like whitewashed tombs." He's telling the people who thought they were the most holy that they were like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but in the inside, what's inside of you, Pharisees? What's inside of you, Saul? What's inside of you, Jewish leaders, is rottenness. It's full of a dead man's bones and everything unclean. And in the same way, on the outside, you appear to people as righteous, but on the inside, you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness. That was the way Jesus spoke to the legalistic leadership who had turned relationship with God or seeking God into following rules and regulations, and I'm pretty certain had dropped off any sort of sense of that personal relationship with God, which Jesus was trying to bring back, because we know it was there in David's heart. "You wove me together in my mother's womb. You touched me, you know where I am." But somehow following the rules became the way. And so Paul was with these Pharisees, and the Pharisees and leaders, Jewish leaders, were able, in connection with Rome, to crucify Christ, and I'm sure they thought they were finished with it, had things under control. And then the resurrection. They didn't believe it, I don't think. Or if they did believe it, they tried to cover it up. But then this movement happened. Peter coming to Jerusalem and preaching on the day of Pentecost, 3,000 people being converted. And moving on and on and on. And Stephen preaching and moving, and the church was growing and growing. This is added to their numbers daily, over and over again. And it's like the movement sort of got bigger than before. And so the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, the religious establishment, were really upset with this, to put it nicely. So that's why we have Paul going to Damascus from Jerusalem. He was chasing down Christians, trying to stop that movement. He hated it. They weren't following the law. They were talking about this false Messiah that had gone against the established Jewish rule, gone against the temple, spoke against the teachers of the law and Pharisees and scribes. Paul hated him. And I don't think Paul realized it, but he was hating Jesus. And if you think about Paul's conversion, I want you to do that for a minute, and maybe a way that you haven't thought about it before. It's a very personal thing. I just want to go back to Acts chapter 9. Forgive me for going over the things we've been going over the last few weeks and getting into months, but Acts chapter 9, verse 1, Paul, Saul, meanwhile, Saul was still breathing out murderous threats against the Lord's disciples. He hated them. He went to the high priest and asked for letters to the synagogues in Damascus so that if he found anyone there who belonged to the way, that is a follower of Jesus, whether men or women, he might take them as prisoners to Jerusalem. As he neared Damascus on his journey, suddenly a light from heaven flashed all around him, and he fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to him, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute the church?" Is that what he said? No. He said, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?" Relationship. Jesus is real. Jesus is breaking through right away that sense of legalism. He's God himself. He's real. He's a person. And he is confronting Paul, person to person. So when we talk about personal faith, what does that mean? Well, most of us don't get knocked down on the road. Now, I don't know about you. My brother's here today with his wife, Beth. And we were brought up in a house where we were always told, put God at the center of your life. And I'm not sure how your experience was as you were growing up, Keith. But I always, deep in my heart, said, yes, I should do that. And in what I wanted to do, I went in different directions. But there was always this tapping on my shoulder. Remember what your parents said. You go to church, remember the stories you heard about Jesus. You're supposed to have a relationship with him. It was, you know, so that's grace moving in, right? That's God personally reaching out, and when you talk about the grace of God, when you talk about God so loved the world, he is reaching out and tapping all of us, I think, to one extent or another. And, you know, we can choose to turn around and see who's there, or we can choose to serve ourselves and say, God's probably going to interfere with what I want, so I'm going to go my own way. Now, I sort of did get knocked down later on, not quite as bad as Paul. But what I want you to see there is that personal touch of Jesus. Even though it was sort of harsh, Paul needed to be knocked down, right? Why do you persecute me? Who are you, Lord? Saul asked. It's a direct dialogue. I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting. Not the church, you're persecuting me, Paul. I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting, he replied. Now get up and go into the city, and you will be told what to do. So you keep moving then through the book of Acts. That dramatic experience, Paul blinded, down on the ground, led to Damascus. In Damascus, the Lord speaks to somebody else, Ananias. And he tells Ananias to go talk to Saul. And Ananias says, wait a minute. That's the one who wants to kill us. So he says, go. Just go. I have a mission for Saul. Go and do it. And then in verse 15 of chapter 9, Acts chapter 9, look again. Actually, chapter 17. You have Ananias now coming to Paul. And it says, then Ananias went to the house and entered it, and placing his hands on Saul, he said, Brother Saul. And so this intimacy from a man who's frightened, what does he do, though? There's Saul, blinded, broken down. The man probably saw he was broken. He touched him and called him brother. So you see this, Jesus speaking to Saul, Jesus speaking to Ananias, Ananias reaching out and touching Paul. And so what you begin to do, I think, if you look at this carefully, is you begin to see that even though it's a narrative of action, if you pay attention, there's all of these things that speak to deep relationships, caring, personal relationships. Now, Paul is driven. He preaches in Damascus, which is up over here. And then he comes back down to Jerusalem. Jerusalem, they were frightened of him, though, just like Ananias was. And then, if you look in verse 27, we've talked about Barnabas. Acts chapter 9, verse 27. Barnabas had listened to Saul, told the church, look, it's all right. Let him come in. Paul's defending the faith now. Paul's in relationship with Jesus. We can trust him. Let him in. Okay. So that was the beginning of Paul's experience. Then he went up to Tarsus. They didn't really like him in Jerusalem. There's nothing worse than someone who's a part of a group and moving forward with a group, leading the group, changes his mind, turns around and goes a different direction, because then they're considered a traitor, right? So Paul was a traitor to the Jews in Jerusalem, to the leadership, to the scribes, the Pharisees, the Sadducees. So he was not going to be tolerated. He was driven out after very short order. Okay, so moving along and continuing in the books of Acts, we're covering these things and looking at what happened. As we look a little further, we come to the city of Antioch, up here. I think you remember the story. Up in Antioch, things were happening. They called for help. Up from Jerusalem came the man Barnabas to serve the church. Barnabas, the one who had welcomed Paul into the church. And after a while, Barnabas was working and said, I need Paul, right? So Barnabas went up to Tarsus and brought Paul back down, relationship building, and then they worked with the church in Antioch for a long time, it says, and the church grew, and at first in Antioch they became Christians. So if you think about the things that we've seen and people calling each other brothers and sisters in this intimacy in Paul and Barnabas, when we think about the churches that were being established, we need to think more than just like there's some fuzzy church there. But there were groups of people, brothers and sisters, deep relationships developing. And we know that there were deep relationships with it in there because, and we know there are multiple because Barnabas and Saul kept relationship with these people in these churches. They were not loners, but they were sent out by the church. We found that in chapter 13 of Acts. Well, let's look at the first few verses of chapter 13. In the church at Antioch, there were prophets and teachers, Barnabas, Simeon called Niger, Lucius, and of Cyrene, Manaen, who had been brought up with Herod the Tetrarch, and Saul. And while they were worshiping the Lord and fasting, the Lord said, set apart for me Saul and Barnabas for the work for which I have called them. So after they had fasted and prayed, they placed their hands on them. Again, there's this, they came around them, right? They embraced them, this body, this church, and then they sent them off. So they were embraced and said, go and share the gospel. And we know that Paul and Barnabas traveled and were very successful. Again, they were people on the move. They, the first trip, went up this way, came up actually around here, over to Antioch and these communities. They established churches. They went to synagogues. People came to faith. And the interesting thing is when they got here, they stayed at the different places a while, and then they went back and stopped everywhere again. before they went home because they were developing relationships with people and they wanted to come back and check on them. We know that's true because if you look in Acts chapter 15, if you want a key to the personality of Saul, look at verse 36 of Acts chapter 15. Saul's now known as Paul. And they had been again at the church at Antioch for a long time. It says in verse 35 of chapter 15, Paul and Barnabas remained in Antioch where they and many others taught and preached the word. So they came back. They had actually reported about their first missionary journey and stayed at the church of Antioch. Then some time passed. They spent some time at the church teaching. And Paul said to us, Barnabas, let us go back and visit the brothers. It's like the family. In all the towns where we preach the word of the Lord and see how they're doing. Paul cared about those churches. He remembered those places he visited. He remembered those people. He thought of them as brothers and sisters. Now, a few weeks ago, we talked about the falling out between Paul and Barnabas and difficulty maybe in understanding that. But one little comment on that is sometimes people who are knitted together the most closely, when they come to a disagreement, when something comes between them, a lot of times the strength of feeling turns in another direction and they part hard. It happens a lot. So we talked about that, tried to figure that out or think about it a few weeks ago, so we don't need to review that again. It's still like too bad that Paul and Barnabas split up. But we know that they became friends again later on. The interesting thing about Paul is even though he had the breakup in the partnership with Barnabas, if you look at verse 40 of Acts chapter 15, you have this, in fact, this ending part of Acts chapter 15, although it's kind of paradoxical because of the breakdown with Barnabas, you see this need that Paul has for these relationships and this caring that Paul has for people and this need that Paul has to not be alone in verse 40. Paul's getting ready to go. Barnabas went another direction. So what did Paul do? He chose Silas. He needed another partner. He didn't want to go alone, and he shouldn't go alone. No, it was teamwork. They were together. They were brothers serving together. And they left, and we talked about this again a few weeks ago, commended by the brothers to the grace of the Lord. So Paul, we don't know what Barnabas did, but we know Paul and Silas were communicating with the church, were with the church, were approved by the church, and were sent out. It's a similar way that they were sent out, commended, as they were the first time, with the approval of the church, in connection with the church of Antioch. So we have Paul and Silas going out again. Now, interestingly, Paul went up this way this time, and it says, verse 41, he went through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches. Thinking about churches. We don't have all the pieces. We know Paul went to Tarsus after he was persecuted himself in Jerusalem, went to Tarsus and some time passed. But I think he was probably evangelizing. It doesn't say anything about how churches in Tarsus or in Cilicia in Syria, up this way, doesn't say anything about how those churches were established exactly. But there were churches, and Paul had relationships with them. So there's a lot of pieces that we don't have. So Paul went up that way. And Tarsus was his hometown. It's interesting. So I think he went to these places, a breakup with Barnabas. He's getting ready to go on another trip. He's starting with a new team, and he goes to a familiar place. I think where he would be encouraged and where he knew he would be able to strengthen the churches. Verse chapter 16 now, we're going to kind of look through this in different parts, try to put some things together. When he came to Derbe, they came to Derbe, it's up on the map, and then Lystra, where there's a disciple named Timothy lived, whose mother was a Jewess and a believer, but whose father was a Greek. Okay, so Timothy is living up in this area. And we know that Timothy was a young man because of letters that Paul later wrote to him. He said, don't let anyone despise you because of your youth, Timothy. He wrote that in a letter to Timothy. We know he was a young man. Okay, and his mother was Jewish and his father was a Greek. Verse 2, the brothers in Lystra and Iconium spoke well of him. He must have been quite a young guy because he's got this reputation between the cities up there. And if you look again about the distance between the places, Timothy was known, Lystra, Iconium, Derbe, a young man who had established himself probably in ministry. Paul said, I want this kid with me. He was building a team. Okay. Verse 3 is kind of odd, though. Paul wanted to take him along on the journey, so he circumcised him because of the Jews who lived in that area, for they all knew that his father was a Greek. And Jewish descendants comes down through the mother. Timothy was Jewish, and yet he wasn't circumcised, probably because his Greek father might not have wanted that. So that's why Timothy's in that circumstance. But back in chapter 15, the church just decided that they weren't going to follow all the rules and regulations except for a very few, right? If you look at what, you know, it said that you had abstained from food sacrificed to idols, from blood, from meat strangled animals, from sexual immorality. If you avoid these things, you will do well. It doesn't say anything about having to follow all the rules and regulations except for a very few. So why? Well, I think, again, interestingly, if you want to know the mind of Paul, he talks a lot in the epistles. So I want you to go to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Start at verse 19. Paul's talking about the way he does his work. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 19. Though I am free, Paul is saying, and belong to no man, I make myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. To the Jews, I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law, although I am not free from God's law, but I am under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. To the weak, I became weak. To win the weak, I have become all things to all men, so that I might, by all possible means, I might save some. I have become all things to all men, so that by all possible means, I might save some. I do this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings. Paul cared about the people that he was ministering to. And I think Paul wanted his team to be of the same mindset that he was. And so Timothy was requested to comply to circumcision because he had a Jewish mother. They would go to synagogues first, and the issue would come up over and over again. You know, are you following the law? What are you doing? Are you circumcised or are you not circumcised? Being Jewish, it would be an odd thing to say, well, yeah, we didn't bother with that. Now, if he was a Gentile, it wouldn't have mattered. But because he was Jewish, it might have been a stumbling block to people who might come to faith. So Paul persuaded Timothy, I'm sure, let's go through this. Let's make all things right in our Jewishness so that we won't offend Jews as we go to the synagogues, as we move around on our journey together. It's interesting. Okay, so Paul is traveling now with Timothy and Silas. And it's fascinating, again, because of this. It's kind of this personal relationship thing that is odd when you, whoop, I do that all the time. We'll leave it off. As they're traveling, the Spirit, so Jesus, God communicated with Paul not to go in this direction, not to go in that direction, but to go to Macedonia, go to a Greek city. God spoke to him of the direction to go. There was this guidance, and I don't know about you, but I think God still prompts us in different directions, leads us in different ways. If we quiet ourselves and get confused, a lot of times, and it may take time, God will show us the way that we need to go. And they landed in the city of Philippi in Greece, in a city where there wasn't a synagogue. And I want to go through the different incidents that we have in chapter 16. Think again about some of the things that happened in Philippi, in the city where they landed and were establishing this church, a city with not too many Jews, a city where there wasn't a synagogue. So, verse 13. On the Sabbath, we went outside the city gate to the river, where we expected to find a place of prayer. We sat down and began to speak to the women who had gathered there. Paul's a Pharisee. Paul has all these rules and regulations. Men didn't talk to women. He's breaking rules. But they were women of prayer. They were women that people, that Paul thought maybe they'll be open. Women had gathered for prayer. And he spoke to them. And one of those listening was a woman named Lydia, dealer in purple cloth, who was from the city of Thyatira, which was in Asia, actually, who was a worshiper of God. And the Lord opened her heart to respond to Paul's message. And when she and the members of her household were baptized, she invited us, Luke is with them now, evidently, to her home and said, "If you consider me a believer in the Lord, come and stay at my house." And she persuaded us. You listen to these words and you think about it a little bit. You have this woman who's following God, seeking God, praying with a group of others. She responds to Paul's message and says, "Come to my home." Again, you have this personal, this intimacy. And we know that those early churches began in houses, especially if there wasn't a synagogue, right? So you see this movement of things beginning to happen, the house church movement of the book of Acts. So you have that incidence. Last week, Jim talked about the unusual situation with this woman who was chasing Paul around and proclaiming that he was a prophet of God, but she was also a fortune teller and not someone that Paul wanted to advocate her case. And she was with people who would make money off of what she could do by fortune telling. And Paul drove the demon out that gave her this ability for them to make money. And when you get in the way of people who are of a religion that are very strict and don't want interference, they get angry when you interfere with the way somebody's making a comfortable living and block that. They get upset, and they had the power to turn the folks in the town against Paul. Paul and Silas ended up, after sharing with Lydia, in jail, and they were beaten. Verse 22 says that, along with the people who had the woman who was making money through her prophecies, through her fortune-telling, the crowd joined in an attack against Paul and Silas, and the magistrates ordered that they be stripped and beaten. And after they'd been severely flogged, they were thrown into prison, and the jailer was commanded to guard them carefully. And upon receiving such orders, he put them in an inner cell and fastened their feet in stocks. Now, that's rough. Flogging meant that their skin on their backs was probably ripped over and over again a few times. They probably still may have had their clothing on or were given their clothing back to put on. They were bloody. They were hurting. They were not attended to. The jailer slapped them in stocks. That would mean they'd be on the floor, probably forced to sit up and had their feet up in the stocks, unable to move. The jailer put them in that place. Uncleaned, unhelped, secured, right? About midnight, verse 25, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God, and the other prisoners were listening to them. And suddenly there was such a violent earthquake that the foundations of the prison were shaken. At once the prison doors flew open and everybody's chains came loose. The jailer woke up, and when he saw the prison doors open, he drew his sword and was about to kill himself because he thought the prisoners had escaped. Why would he do that? If your prisoners escaped, you got the punishment of the prisoners. Whatever their punishment was, if they were going to be flogged, you were going to be flogged. If they were going to be put to death, you were going to be put to death. If they were going to be tortured, you were going to be tortured. Better to put a sword in your own heart and get it over with quick. That was the situation. And this is the guy that locked Paul in stocks with wounds and bloodied and broken. Somehow Paul still was singing. How would you feel about the guy that threw you in stocks the night before? Would you love him? I don't know. But Paul shouted, "Wait a minute, don't hurt yourself." Paul cared personally about this guy who'd put him in stocks. And the jailer called for lights and rushed in and fell trembling before Paul and Silas. And he brought them out and asked him, "Sirs, what must I do to be saved? Tell me. I can see that you must have been speaking the truth. I want to know how to be saved. My life was in danger. You've already saved my life." They replied, "Believe on the Lord Jesus Christ and you will be saved, you and your household." Then they spoke the word of the Lord to him and all the others in his house. And at that hour of the night, the jailer took them and washed their wounds. finally. You see some tenderness happening, right? Everything's changed. And immediately he and all his family were baptized. So you see again, this house, this family, this coming to faith, another house in the city of Philippi where God is moving. Verse 34, the jailer brought them into his house and set a meal before them, and he was filled with joy because he had come to believe in God, he and his whole family. Lydia and her household, the jailer and his family. But again, you have this family sense of intimacy. That's why I had Philippians chapter 1 as our scripture reading today. Because here we just see a glimpse of the establishment of these churches. We have a sense of this personalness. We have this sense of Paul sharing the gospel, people receiving and bringing them into their homes. We have this idea and knowledge of Paul returning and coming back. He returned to Philippi on another missionary journey. And then later from Rome, when he was in prison again, he wrote letters to these people. And I think you'll understand a little bit more of Paul's heart if we listen carefully to Philippians chapter 1, starting at verse 3. I thank my God every time I remember you, and all my prayers for all of you. I always pray with joy because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day. We just read about the first day. Until now, being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus. And it is right for me to feel this way about all of you, since I have you in my heart. I have you in my heart. For whether I'm in chains or defending or confirming the gospel, all of you share in God's grace with me. God can testify how I long for you all with the affection of Christ Jesus. Personal. So Paul opens his letter, talking to them, sharing that he has the affection of Christ for them. And you know, over the years, through the years, because of men like Paul, people like Paul, churches like the church in Antioch, and the message being passed on and on and on, we share in that same affection and intimacy together. Let's close with the hymn, number 286, Blessed Be the Tie That Binds.